Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Light Reading podcast. My name is Phil Harvey. I'm an editor here at Light Reading.
And I'm Rich Paulhus, co-founder of Quantum Loophole.
Rich, thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate it. We are recording this live at the Data Center World Conference in Washington, D.C. And Quantum Loophole is a new company to me, but I'm very curious about, I know you're in the data center, either building and or management space. So maybe you could first introduce the company, and then we can talk about sort of how you differ from what I would consider a classic data center operator now.
Sure. We're not a classic data center operator, and there isn't really a category defined for what we are. We're definitely unique. Our founder, Josh Snowhorn, concepted this approach a number of years ago. I think he saw the state of where the industry would be today and was trying to think through how to solve for some of the major problems while accommodating the scale that our customers need. So what we do is we master plan data center communities. So we take very, very large pieces of land and we think through all of the issues that we have to build or design for, accommodate for, to provide the scale capacity that our customers need over, say, a 15-year basis. So that means that we take this land, and in this case in Maryland, our first project was an old Alcoa aluminum smelter site. It was the single largest industrial piece of property in Maryland. Okay. And we master plan that so that we can sell the land, power, water, and fiber to our customers over time. And initially, we look very much just like a real estate company.
Right.
Right now, if you went out to the site, you'd think we're just a bunch of civil engineers preparing the land, building the roads, the water, the sewer, the power infrastructure.
Right.
And there's sort of a step function in our company where we do that. Our customers build campuses in our community. So multiple customers will build campuses in our community, and then we provide service to them to accommodate their needs in the data center industry.
Okay, so you make it more or less a one-stop shop for land, power, water, all of that.
So on the power front, we don't sell the firm power. We connect them. Now we front, say, the money to build the substation, the initial substation.
Right.
And then we engage our customers in that process. They'll ultimately buy that firm power from the grid, from Burst Energy in our case in Maryland.
Right.
We'll eventually provide critical power as a service to them. So that's an investment in certain types of generation on site, mostly batteries in this case, mostly storage, to drive an offset to, you know, to diesel and current technologies. We come at this in a way where we're trying to harmonize renewables to data center load through the infrastructure on our campus in a beautiful way.
Okay.
That's just one aspect. And that's part of sort of this, you know, building a community. Then you have to have fiber either nearby when you're in site selection, or in our case, we're building the highest capacity fiber network ever built from from Ashburn up to our site right now. So we've bored under the Potomac twice. We're on our third big river bore under a river called the Monocacy right now. And on capacity, you've got 34 two-inch conduits coming through there designed to accommodate 69, 12 fibers each. So you have this huge, huge capacity of over 200,000 strands of potential capacity in this network. And you'd say, why? Well, that's because you're connecting the biggest data center market in the world to sort of the north bookend of that data center market. And what's potential on our site is probably a $30 billion investment on a conservative basis in terms of data center infrastructure. I think it'll go way beyond that. But the connect point will, you know, be centered on us, and there'll be much more over time in Maryland.
Okay.
But sort of we're the place that sort of interconnects those two places. So a very, very big fiber play, a very big power play, and obviously a very big land play, all there to support the needs of the hyperscale community and all of the third party, you know, multi-tenant data center operators.
Who are your biggest customers to date, or what kinds of companies are those customers, I guess?
So there are only two that are announced at this point. Okay. One was Align Data Centers. They bought 75 acres on the site, and then okay. they ran into a big snag on the site. When they went to the law in Maryland was not really set to accommodate data centers in a way from a backup generation perspective. So when they went to submit their 504 megawatt backup generation plan, the PSC rejected them. They were trying to get an exemption to a CPCN process. And a CPCN is a certificate for public convenience and need. Okay. If you're the utility and you want to site a new power plant or a transmission line, you have to sort of go through this very long study to show that that investment is prudent from a need perspective, but also where you're siting it tucks into the community in an appropriate and acceptable way.
Right.
And the PSC sure. regulates that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in Maryland, they weren't set from a law perspective when they saw a 504 megawatt power, you know, backup power plan, because it was so big, which is sort of not nominal in the data center industry, but it's where the world is going.
Right.
They weren't used to that. So they treated it like a power plant.
Right.
And so what we just did this last legislature is we fixed that. The governor sponsored a law, which is the critical infrastructure law of 2024, which fixed and defined backup generation as backup generation and not needing a CPCN.
Okay.
That passed the House 134-0. It passed the Senate near unanimously. And it's waiting for the governor's signature, which we expect to happen okay. sometime early next month.
He's a podcast listener, so I'm sure. No, I don't know. I got started laughing at my own dumb lie. But well, that's incredibly. So this, what's the total scale then of what you're building then? So you talk, and I also want to come back to you said Align Data Centers was one of your clients,
and then Rowan Digital is the second one that's announced. Okay. So Rowan has 156 acres in the southwest of our community, and they already have a site plan approved for several hundred megawatts on that site. And there'll be more announcements this year now that we've gotten through sort of the sorting the backup generator legislation. But those announcements aren't made yet.
Okay.
We have to allow Align technically has backed out until the generator.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. They've
right,
got,
issue
they've
is,
got a mitigating circumstance
right.
before
so
they're on.
But technically right now,
but they're interested
they've
in
sort
space.
Of backed out, right?
Okay.
But they own 75 acres on the site.
Okay.
And when you get to the scale question that you just asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can think of scale in a number of different ways. So the 2,200 acres is massive as it relates. I mean, this is the size of the city of London. It's a
right.
giant area, right? 3.5 square miles.
Yeah.
The amount of investment, Sage Policy Group in Maryland did an economic impact study, and they forecasted based off what they see and what they know in the data center industry, they're forecasting a $30 billion investment on the site. I can tell you that's a conservative number. So very, very large investment on the site. And what that'll do is catalyze an awful lot more development in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that the investment in our site is probably far north of $30 billion over the next 15 years. And then I would argue it's catalyzing probably $100 billion investment in Maryland. But that requires, that requires policy, that requires the state to think through what it means to host that scale of infrastructure.
Yeah, it's huge.
Now there's something later we can talk about that I think is more the essence of what we do and who we are that will enable this over time. But scale wise, we're gonna create 60,000-70,000 jobs in Maryland. Obviously the investment is massive. The amount of fiber that is going to require is absolutely massive. And as you can see, we seeded this thing with a very, very large fiber build.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So you own the dark fiber that's going into to this, or
we
are
do.
You partner? And
no, it's us 100%.
Okay,
and our financial partners.
Right, and so that's why I was curious about that, because that's obviously that's a huge connectivity is going to be a huge challenge for for sites like that. On the other side of that, it has to connect up to a service provider somewhere. What do those communication service providers, what can they do to make consuming their network services easier? Or have you guys had any challenges in connecting up or potentially connecting up a fiber build of that magnitude?
So I wouldn't describe it as challenges. When you're doing this, there is a timing issue.
Okay.
So operating, a big fiber network as a service provider with lit services or dark services, it's hard to make bets in this industry right now ahead of the infrastructure,
Sure, yeah.
because there are so many opportunities. The scale of what's happening, nationally and globally is so big. So they've got to make very wise bets. So there are a number of people that have made bets because they have a sense of what's going on, with us, and what they anticipate in Maryland. So we already see, some dark fiber providers, designing and beginning to build. In terms of the large lit service providers, as well, when we cited this, remember, this was an old Alcoa aluminum smelter site. I'm not sure if I shared that
Yeah,
originally.
you did. Yeah.
And this is just south of Frederick, Maryland, in Frederick County. And Frederick is, the second largest city in the state. And this was one of the largest it was the largest industrial piece of land, but also one of the largest industrial sites. So you actually have a decent amount of carrier fiber in the area. What we expect them to do is obviously connect to us when we're ready for them to connect. That the fiber build will be done in March of 25.
Okay.
And we kind of like a big data center. In a big data center, you'd bring in fiber on one side and the other side, and you get to the peering core in kind of a meet me room location.
Sure.
And then you basically do the cross connects for everybody, through there. Same thing here, but this is 22 acres. We have 2,200 acres. You have a network center in sort of the east of the property and a network center in the west of the property. And we build this 43-mile loop up to the site. And then we interconnect those network centers like you would in a building. And then we build multiple rings on the site so that every potential parcel on the site can be interconnected back to everybody else.
Okay.
So we think through all of that infrastructure up front. That's what we're doing is unique in that way. I
Yeah.
mean, obviously we're risking an awful lot of capital up front preparing, but it's being well received by the marketplace.
Well, how much capital is in the project now, and how much is committed, for the near term? You said this even the fiber part, like we're talking
Yeah, we're spending
2025.
over $100 million on the fiber right now. We've built most of the East Ring in Maryland. Now we have to come back and build the West Ring in Virginia. We spent $100 million buying the property.
Okay.
And we're spending roughly another $100 million on the site, in improvements throughout the site, massive substation, massive water and sewer infrastructure through the site, the roads.
Sure.
And yeah, so we're
And you said master plan community, so you'll have like a playground, and you'll get on to people for trimming their hedges a certain way and stuff like
So there
that.
is a property owner sort of arrangement there, but what's more important as it relates to that is this community, Frederick County, adopted a critical digital infrastructure ordinance that defines how they want to see data centers done better in Frederick County.
Okay.
They're a little bit fearful, or maybe a lot fearful, of the sprawl that's taken place down in Loudoun.
Sure, yeah.
And it's interesting that that sprawl was the genesis of the idea for Quantum Loophole.
Okay.
When Josh and I first talked about this back in like late 2019, the conversation was kind of like, what's happened down there is amazing. Everybody's built their careers on all of that, but it's almost too much of a good thing in some ways. And it's very impactful on the community. Now the revenue is incredible. It's hundreds and hundreds of million to Loudoun County and massive revenue to the state. But the
Yeah.
impact to the community is challenging in a bunch of different ways. And you've seen this opposition to data centers evolve in Loudoun County in a way that it resulted in the first rejection of a data center just a couple months ago. And we would argue that if we continue developing data centers out the way that we have over the last 20 years, on the margin, each data center will make the next data center harder in a given market.
Right.
So we have to think about this, prospectively in a much more thoughtful, proactive way. And we're doing that. We're going to define something that we call EcoScale that we hope serves as an example on how to think about, the fiber and the water and the power in this land in a way that doesn't scare, say, the communities in which we have to build all of this infrastructure, mm-hmm. but can be embraced by them because it's there to serve humanity and not take away from the human experience in any way. And that, you know, we can go into a bunch of different nuanced discussions about that and what ecoscale means, but just think of it in a way that's beautiful and thoughtful to the data center industry in terms of meeting their capacity in a smart way and improves their speed to market, right? Because we're preparing all this land up front.
Right.
And then it it helps all of those carriers in terms of how to connect into these massive sites. And then it's there to create win-wins for the community and the government as well. Okay. So we're thinking of those three big constituent groups in a way to try to harmonize them, you know, to support humanity and not feel like we're, you know, hurting any one group really.
Okay. As at this conference, we're talking about AI being a, you know, huge influencer in terms of data center capacity for, you know, rehabbing the capacity of old sites. And then of course, building new sites and that sort of thing. You guys are in the new build phase. Are any of these concerns or sort of any of these requirements that you're hearing at this show a surprise to you, given that you guys have thought ahead 15 years?
No, I would say the beauty of Josh, our CEO, that, you know, pulled this team together, and we have just amazing people on this team. I think the beauty of Josh is even back then when we were first talking about that, he was describing, you know, this scale, and he was describing these problems to me in those discussions. I think he, you know, sees around corners that most of us just can't see, and he sees it very, very clearly, and he organized this company to address those things. We would not be, you know, where we are today, but not for that vision and that foresight that he had. Now, the next best thing that he did was he went out and assembled a team of some of the smartest people in the industry. And I would argue, on top of being smart and understanding the technical nuances of our industry, are also thoughtful in a beautiful way and have come up with these concepts that I'm talking about that I think will protect our customers' abilities to develop data centers out over the next 20 years.
Is the at the end of it, when you've got tenants, clients, you know, on your land or in your sort of facility, I should say, you're going to be kind of not just a landlord, but also kind of a service provider to them?
That's right.
Okay. And then?
Not a landlord per se, because we sell the land fee simple to them.
Okay.
Because they're going to invest tens of billions of dollars.
You just develop around it so that it's attractive for them to buy.
That's right. We made it sort of data center ready, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay. So you make the land data center ready. They buy it, they install, they build their data centers, and then you've got all the, you know, the fiber build and all of that is sort of you being both a master plan community, but also kind of a service provider at that level.
Yeah, and I would add on to that. I think that's all spot on. But I would add on to that, along the way, that vision has to, you know, you have to be constantly engaged in thinking through where we're going to, you know, go over the next 10, 15 years. And we have to make these adjustments. Like when you see NVIDIA bring out the Blackwell chip,
right,
or you see Apple with their M3 and all this stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and you see the processing power and the densities that are coming, you know, solving for grid modernization, then ultimately adding generation and solving this and solving microgrid legislation or policy, thinking through all those things way in advance, so that we're knocking the obstacles out of the way to support our customers to maintain that speed to market advantage, mm-hmm. and being really thoughtful, but then understanding how to navigate the politics, the local community dynamics, and, you know, knock those hurdles out of the way, but in a way that supports all of these people. That's really what EcoScale is.
Okay.
And so we spend probably a disproportionate amount of time relative to other people in data center environments or companies, let's say, setting that up. And we're way out in advance on policy, on regulation, and, you know, thinking through the hurdles that are going to evolve and trying to, you know, prepare. I would say that you know, when we were talking about Josh in that way, I would say that he remains sitting in that corner around, you know, two corners, you know, thinking through. His mind is sitting out there and trying to, you know, how do we position things to help these guys that far out?
Okay. I'm going to wrap it up here. Rich Paul Huss, thank you so much for explaining all about Quantum Loophole and what you guys are up to, and for being on our podcast.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, man.